what's going on, Champagne Sharks? I haven't done this part of the house cleaning in a while, but don't forget we have merchandise now over at Redbubble. Just go to Redbubble and search out T-Bilzy, T-B-I-L-Z as in zero, I-E, or search Champagne Sharks and you'll find a bunch of links to... We have three designs up, and under each design, it's not the best organized site in the world, to be honest, Redbubble. Like, I would like it that you just put in our name or our store and you see every product. But no, the way Redbubble works, it seems, is you'll see at first three of our designs. And each design, under each design, you'll see all the products corresponding to that design. So you'll see mugs, t-shirts, hoodies, notebooks, iPad cases, iPhone cases, and a whole bunch of stuff, stickers, pins. You'll see all that stuff on Redbubble, but you have to click each design to see the full line of products for that design. And not each design. Every design doesn't have the same amount of products, you know? So definitely click everyone and check it out. Maybe we'll put a link to it in the show notes. That'll probably be a good thing to do. But yeah, other thing, patreon.com/champagnesharks and get access to all the back episodes. You get access to double the new episodes. You get access to the voice and chat server on Discord where you can ask our guest questions and get previews of who's coming up. A lot of other good stuff. And yeah, I think that's it for now. Hey, Ken, how's it going?
What's up, T? How you guys doing out there? This is Kenny. I'm suspended on Twitter, so you cannot find me on Twitter right now, but I'll be back on Monday at Lazarus Lives X3.
The Breonna Taylor stuff is a mess, and the Breonna Taylor thing happened where it was it wanton endangerment? Is that what it was? Wanton endangerment was what I think they got charged with, and wanton endangerment is just basically like recklessness. That's like you bust into the house doing something really reckless, like juggling chainsaws or shooting a gun with your hand over your eyes. Like, let me give a very specific definition, and let me find it for Kentucky. I want to make sure I use their statute so that I don't get it wrong. But according to the Kentucky statute, someone is guilty of wanton endangerment in the first degree when, under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of life, he wantonly engages in conduct which creates a substantial danger of death or a serious physical injury to another person. So that's like basically saying that you're super, super careless in a way that can very predictably lead to someone dying, you know, right. Which...
Like drunk driving.
Yeah. Which I think is not quite a good... I mean, if you're shooting in the direction of somebody's bed, I feel like it's way more than just being recklessly indifferent. Like, that's very targeted, you know? Like, but yeah, people are rightfully mad.
Well, that's something that Mario... I don't know if Mario's going to jump on, but Mario said something that was pretty interesting, and I agree. He said, you know, why are people tripping when the family took the blood money? You know, and then the family came out with a statement today saying, you know, we're in favor of nonviolence and no rioting and all that kind of stuff. That's a prepared statement. You know what I'm saying?
See, this is kind of my whole thing. Like, I think the families should take the money because that's one way to hit.
No. I'm not saying they shouldn't take the money.
I'm not saying you are, but I'm just adding context. I know what you're saying. Like, I have no problem with them taking the money, but the problem with them taking the money and why I think Mario calls it blood money is that it seems like they make a condition with the money of you've got to say conciliatory stuff. And because for some reason, every time these people take the money, statements like what you said come out where they say, let's make sure everyone gets along.
I feel like that's part of the package. It's almost like, you know, Rodney King, can we all just get along? Well, yeah, after he got all that damn money, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's weird. It's like when you get it, like when Michael Jordan got a divorce from his wife, part of the settlement was she can't do any interviews or write any books about him.
Yeah. And there was that lawyer, it wasn't Benjamin Crump, but it was another one who straight up admitted that's what they do for the one for Amber Geiger. People were saying, why is the family of Botham Jean hugging Amber Geiger and saying they forgive her and stuff?
It's part of the package.
The lawyer in that case, the civil case, I think didn't happen yet, but the lawyer was saying, oh, it plays well to the civil trial. They forgive and stuff. So people were like, wait, so basically they're hugging and doing all this stuff to Amber Geiger because if they show like they're like docile or forgiving or magnanimous, it helps them get more money in the future. So to me, if they think like that in terms of before the civil trial, then that must mean that that part of the civil trial is being forgiven. Like it probably works in reverse too. Like after the civil trial, they say, well, we're going to need you. Part of the settlement is going to be you have to not make too much of a ruckus. And right. I don't know. I'm curious about that. I mean, it's too consistent for it to not play a role, I think. You know, the whole, after we get the money, we're not going to make too much ruckus, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's sad, man, because when you look at how they even, you know, there's a whole lot to unpack about this thing, but it's no different than all of the other cases where this happened. I've seen it happen here in Portland with Kendra James. You know what I'm saying? The same thing. I've seen it happen with Jahar Perez here in Portland, where the Kendra James situation was even worse because the city of Portland didn't want to give her family shit. They offered her family, I think it was $400,000, and they were trying to get more, and it was like take it or leave it. And with Jahar Perez's family, they didn't get anything because of that whole situation, take it or leave it. And it just seems like because this one is such a high profile, it's like the vultures are out picking. You know what I mean? You got people writing books. Yeah. You got people making movies. You got people making documentaries. You got everybody putting her on flyers for parties and shit. And it's like, she got sacrificed for everybody else's greed. And I'm not trying to be on no Illuminati weirdo shit. I'm not talking about, you know.
No, I'm with you on that. I mean, she kind of has. Like, somebody put up a, like the meme that they have now, and they had that, these are the Brianna Fest that they made, where they made this whole influencer thing, you know, around Brianna Taylor. It's like Brianna Fest, and they misspelled her name on one of the flyers or something. Like, and then all these like loving hip hop type influencers.
Yeah,
and
they're all eating off of it.
Yeah. And then all like the woke SJW style grifters were bashing that one because that one was, for lack of a better word, the more quote unquote niggerish one. You know, it was more love, actual loving hip hop people on it. So all like the academic and the social justice warrior type of black grifters were like, this is disgusting. But then those same types, including like Brittany Cooper and Professor Crunk, like that, and those other people, they had their own Breonna Taylor event where they put all their faces front of Jamila Lemieux, Brittany Cooper. I forgot the basketball player's name. The one that got grief for being on the boat with all the white women.
Oh, Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I remember that. Kyrie was part of that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that flyer, and the flyer was, they made it look like Breonna Taylor photobombed her own flyer. Like it was all eight of them in the front and front and center in big letters. Yeah. And then Breonna Taylor's face, she looked like a little angel. She was small and transparent.
And in the back, background. In the background. Yeah. It kind of reminded you of that Death Row picture that Vibe magazine did years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that with Tupac, Dr. Dre, and Suge Knight and Snoop Dogg?
Yeah. Or you know what it reminded me of, too? But this picture, I think, was kind of rip-off of that picture. The Firm album cover, where they put nature as an afterthought. Like, you can tell they Photoshop nature into it. So it's like Foxy, Nah, yeah. and AZ. And then originally Cormega was part of the group.
Right.
With Cormega. So they slapped in nature as an afterthought at the end. And his picture is clearly Photoshopped in and extra small. He looks like someone's little brother is stuck into the frame.
That's hilarious. I forgot about that. I completely forgot because Cormega was part of the Firm and Steve Stout had him kicked out. That's funny.
Yeah, so that picture, I think they like photoshopped him out or something, put the Cormega in there. Clearly, it is smaller than everyone else's head and further in the back. And that's what they did with Breonna Taylor. They totally natured Breonna Taylor.
Just on a side note, had you ever, this is just a sidebar real quick, had you ever heard of Nature before that?
No, I never heard of Nature before that. And he had a couple of albums since, but I only found that out through Wikipedia. Like, I've never heard.
I never knew who that dude was until then.
Yeah, and there was like a ton of, that was back in the day. Like, this isn't happening anymore. But you remember this. Do you remember the old posse cuts? Everybody used to have a posse cut, but it was a posse cut of just your boys. Like, no one that anybody knew. Like, now you can't do that.
Wu-Tang used to do that a lot.
Yeah. If you're gonna have features, you gotta have, like, actual rappers. But back then, like, people used to, they'd be like, big artists would have a posse cut, and everybody on it would be like, yo, the guy who cuts my meat at Western Beef? Yeah, come on the track. You know, the guy who puts sandwiches at Bodega. You want to be in the track? Come on.
His little cousin that just got out of jail?
Yeah. Someone came out of jail. You know, my high school coach. You want to be on the track? Yeah.
There's a posse cut. I know it's on the vinyl because I have the vinyl, but there's a posse cut on the Old Dirty Bastards, on Old Dirty Bastards' first album. Oh, I think it's called Protect Your Neck from the Zoo Part 2 or something like that. And it's got a bunch of rappers on there. I've never... at the time, I didn't know who 60 Second Assassin was and Shorty Shit Stain and all these rappers. I was like, who the fuck are these dudes? And they're just rapping. They're just rapping. And it's, you know, like 7 minutes and they're just yelling and screaming and rapping and shit. Like that, the 90s was good for those posse cuts where you could just get a bunch of dudes that, you know, you never heard.
Oh, yeah, 90s. Even the 80s. I remember, this is probably the 90s. I remember, it was the 90s. Remember Gangstar had Down the Line? And he had a bunch of dudes on it, that posse cut. And one guy was like doing nursery rhymes, you know?
I think they was all up in their high, man, smoking that angel dust.
Yeah. He was like, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck and woodchuck could chuck wood?
Yeah.
I think, yo, is this nigga serious?
This motherfucker's dead serious. They put that on the album and released it.
They put it right on the album. That same album, he had like J. Rue and like real rappers on it. And then he put those guys. Like, why not? Oh, LL Cool J had the Farmers Boulevard posse cut. You know? Yep. And those dudes were just dudes from Farmers Boulevard. Like, literally, they were just like, where did he even find these dudes? But Nature wasn't even one of those guys. The reason I was bringing that up is Queensbridge used to have a lot of those guys, like those infamous mob guys and some randos and Big Noid. But even among those guys, I never heard of Nature. Like, Nature, I feel like they found them just for that Firm album.
Yeah.
You know, they called him up to the majors. Like to me, I'm surprised they didn't call up.
Yeah, called him up to the majors, exactly.
Yeah. Like, to me, I'm surprised they didn't take someone from the infamous mob or Big Noid or someone. I don't know why they went straight to Nature. That was very weird.
I think that was a Steve Stout call, because I know that I heard that story on, where did I hear that story when they was talking about the Firm? It might have been Combat Jack. I can't remember where that I heard that story, but it was, I guess Cormega had a falling out with Steve Stout and he went over Nas and just picked this guy. Like, that wasn't even Nas's pick. Like, Nas didn't. Because remember, Nas rapped about Nature getting his ass whooped later on, he said, that's why Nature got Timberland up or something. He said something about, that's why Nature got a Timberland put to his head or something he said album later.
Yeah, I do know they didn't like Nature after. And they kind of dissed them. But even on the album, which was funny, if you listen to the album, like, you say Firm Trio over and over again.
Yeah.
I'm actually listening to it. I'm like, damn, they didn't wait for the guy to even leave the group. He's in the group and he keeps saying Firm Trio. Like, Firm Trio, the Firm Trio's in the house. And it's like, damn. So I was wondering if they even recorded tracks before he even joined the group. And then Steve Stout
added some verses later and just put his verse on a couple of songs. And
yeah,
that was weird.
That's
unfortunate.
That Firm album is the second bad album that I think I ever. The first best bad album is
Group Home.
The first Group Home album.
Okay, yeah. I knew it. Yeah, I'm about to say gotta be Group Home. Gotta be. Yeah. That album has the best beats.
Those beats are
Premier's
so
ever
good.
Done. But he got these dudes on there.
I almost want to do a challenge. He's like, give me the worst rappers you have, and I bet you can make beats so good that you will listen to the album. I listen to the album like every day for like 6 months.
Oh, yeah. You know what's funny is that I was thinking Group Home, that came out, what, 95?
I think so. Sounds about right.
About 95. So I think that those were the beats that, because you remember Gangstar, Guru bounced and was doing the Jazzmatazz stuff. So like, I think Premier was like, yeah, I'm going to show him. And Nas wasn't getting no beats from him no more. I'll show all these motherfuckers. I'm going to put these bums on here and let them rap and listen to these beats. That's the perfect album. If you go to the gym, put that album on from beginning to end.
And it's like somehow their raps, even though they're bad, they work for the beats.
So it
somehow,
works, yeah.
Somehow, even the guy Mudcat Nutcracker, he's so bad, he actually starts becoming good.
Yep, for real. You're dead right. Dude, you were reading my mind when you said Group Home, because I think they have a second album. I never even heard it, but I don't think Premier did the beats on it. But that first Group Home, like that first J. Rue, man, if you buried a CD in the ground and said, hey, what was this hip hop thing? And you dug out Sun Rises in the East and that first Group Home album, you could live off those two albums on a desert island somewhere for at least 6 months easily.
You know what's crazy about Sun Rises in the East is Sun Rises in the East is Premier 2.
Yeah.
But it's got J. Rue, who's like as opposite in lyrical skill as the Group Home guys.
Yeah.
And what's funny is somehow they're both neck and neck. One has rhymes that are a million times better, and one has the worst rhymes possible. Premier's beats are so good that they kind of overshadow the great rhymes and the bad rhymes. Like there's just as good as J. Rue's rhymes were. They were really good. Like, I think Premier was just in his bag at that time.
He was in his bag even since then.
I don't think Premier has ever been as good as he was in that year. That year he was on something.
Man, he was in his bag from '94 to '96. Premier was I remember I seen an interview with him, and he said he was getting, because he was talking about when he did Unbelievable for Biggie Smalls, and he said that they didn't have the money and the budget to pay him for a beat. And he said at that time he was getting $30,000 a beat.
Wow.
So, and he said that Biggie convinced him to just do something simple, and it ended up being Unbelievable, which doesn't sound simple to me. You know what I mean? It's one of the best songs on the whole fucking album.
The premiere also do Kick in the Door.
He did Kick in the Door.
Those couple of years, Premier was like untouchable.
Nas's Like came out at that same time.
Yeah, yeah. He started phoning it in a little bit later. But that stage, in those couple of years, you know what it was like? Stevie Wonder had this period where people don't realize, but like Stevie Wonder's best albums came out in a ridiculously short amount of time. Like Songs in the Key of Life and Hotter Than July and all those albums. Yep. He was doing like masterpieces and double albums like every year. And
he started falling off. Remember when he did, he basically did the entire soundtrack for Jungle Fever, Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
And that's when it got bad. I was like, okay, Stevie's just, you know, they paid him a lot of money and he was at home and figured they'd just put something in here that fits. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's Stevie, so you're going to buy it. I mean, what are you going to do? Tell Stevie Wonder he can't make good music anymore?
I mean, just that chorus. I got jungle fever. He's got white girl crazy. She's got black boy hazy. Like, what the fuck is this dude doing, man?
Spike Lee wrote that.
Oh my god, did he?
No, I'm just saying.
I wouldn't be surprised. That shit was.
That's not some shit Spike Lee would say. That's straight out of Do the Right Thing, bro.
That is true. That is something he would say. But yo, you know what was crazy about that bad Jungle Fever album? He was just trying to get bad a little bit before then. Because remember Part Time Love. Like Part Time Lover was catchy, but that's no song in the Key of Life.
Yeah,
Part Time Lover is like some lounge lizard type shit. Like,
yep, that's something you hear when you go get coffee with some chick in 1989, though.
Yeah,
like not today, but like 1989, you'll hear that and you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of catchy. It was like the Stevie Wonder that white people could digest.
Yeah, that's some shit that Jack Tripper and Larry would have listened to in the Regal Beagle in an episode of Three's Company before they went and macked it on some chicks. Like that. Right. Like that's that type of music. But even bad Stevie Wonder was still listenable. Like, I can't lie. Like, Jungle Fever was kind of catchy. I hate to admit it.
It didn't age bad. I'll say it didn't age bad.
Yeah.
Like, that era of Stevie Wonder, didn't age bad like Pink Cadillac and Aretha Franklin. You know what I mean? Like, that aged horrible. Which is bad. Just bad the video music. For that is oh my god, it was horrible. It's like, damn, the '80s weren't too kind to a lot of our. You know, that was around the time where James Brown too, because Mary did Living in America and Rocky and all that shit. And it was like at that time, like the '80s just was not good for them. Even if you listen to a lot of the George Clinton Parliament albums in the mid to late '80s, they were horrible, bad music.
Yo, you want to know a really bad? No, the '80s were bad, but at the time. I'm not going to lie. I thought the songs were dope. And I listen to them now. I'm like, this is horrible. Like the Patti LaBelle song on Beverly Hills Cop. I listen to that now. And I'm like, that's pretty corny.
Aretha Franklin on the freeway.
Yeah.
on the freeway in the Pink Cadillac. Yeah.
But even then, I can still kind of listen to them in a goofy way. You know what I mean? I could karaoke.
It's kind of like elevator karaoke music.
Yeah, like the other day, remember it was Patti LaBelle and Gladys Knight did the verses, right? So I was in and out of watching it, and she was doing that song License to Kill, Gladys Knight. So I go on YouTube and I found the video. So apparently that song was on the 007 James Bond soundtrack, but I don't remember what James Bond. It was some James Bond movie in the 80s. You know what I mean? And they had her dressed up like James Bond and shit. Like, it's hilarious. Like, you know, you got to see it, man. It's horrible.
And speaking of that music in the 80s, like a lot of the legends, you know, they kind of had that corny stuff going on in the 80s. But it was some good music that got kind of, it's hard to say overlooked. Because they were hits, but you just feel like they didn't get that legendary status, like stuff Patrice Rushen was putting out.
Oh, Emily King was putting out.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of stuff.
The Whispers.
The Whispers especially.
Yeah.
A lot of legends were selling out for that white new wave and pop money. You know what I'm saying? But the songs at the time, by 80s standards, you know, kind of hit. And you can listen to them now, like, you know, in karaoke on a road trip. But 90s was when everyone lost their mind because they were trying to do that New Jack Swing. And New Jack Swing is not an easy sound to do if you're old.
Not.
Because... because they don't know hip hop. So Smokey Robinson doesn't understand hip hop. So if Smokey Robinson tries to blend hip hop and soul, it doesn't sound right. Have you ever seen Gang Banging by Smokey Robinson?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Vita's, that's how I met Vita.
Oh, you met
because she's the one that posted that. She's the one that posted that. I had never seen that before, and I think that song is from like 90. Damn.
Oh, wow. 2004.
2004. Yeah. If I say it's not that old. It's not. It's old, but it's not that old. And Smokey
it looks like the 90s.
The way he's dressed. Yeah. And that's how an old person thinks about gangbanging.
Yeah.
And think about hip hop. Yeah. And hip hop. Yeah.
Here's another one. Because, in the 80s, Diana Ross was able to do... I mean, this was cheesy music, but, like, I Want Muscle
oh, man, that was so corny. Shit like
that. Yeah, that was so corny, but compared to what she did in the 90s when she tried New Jack Swing. Have you ever seen Working Overtime?
Yes.
Oh, my God. She was doing the Roger Rabbit, and she had acid-washed jeans.
I think what happened is, especially for the female artists, because female artists in the 80s were big time. So you got Janet Jackson, Whitney Houston, all these different artists. I think what happened was the old legendary artists wanted to compete with them.
Yep.
And that's where they fucked up. They should not have competed with, because think about it, Luther didn't compete with anybody. He just did his own thing.
Yeah,
but
sure.
But when Whitney did that I'm Every Woman and they remixed it into some like techno shit, you remember that?
Yeah.
That's when they were like, okay, we got to try to catch up to this shit. Like,
but no, I kind of feel like a lot of those artists had to go into that kind of stuff because, at that time, a lot of people, money wasn't right. You know what I'm saying? Like,
these artists now,
they've got stuff going on now, man, where they really got their bag correct. You know what I mean? Like, they understand the full game.